podcast in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
Missy.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One in 17-10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Bosses up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. Their odds against. Love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes. Listen on Audio Boom or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
A very warm welcome along, everyone. You are listening to The Punt podcast here with William Hill ahead of this weekend's football. It is good to have your company. Dave Kellner here. And over the course of the next 40 minutes, we'll hear from beIN Sports Carrie Brown. We're going to talk to Carrie about the January transfer window, and Carrie was at Spurs United on Wednesday night at Wembley as well. We'll talk about that match, the fallout from that match, the top four and the relegation picture as well. And we've got Pete Farris, Gav Pushlowski, Al Ross giving their bets in the Football League, and Sam Norris is going to give you a selection in Europe as well. But first, as ever, I am joined by two stalwarts of the podcast. It's a warm welcome, a good morning to Derek McGovern. Good morning, Derek.
Good morning. I hope I'm not the wart part of that stalwart, am I?
undoubtedly. How's your week going so far, Derek?
Not bad. Liverpool won and Man United got beat, so ideal, really.
And completing the team as we get ready to look ahead to the Premier League matches that are televised this weekend, it's William Hill's Andy XL. Good morning to you, Andy.
Good morning. If he's the wart, that makes me the stool, and there's more than one meaning to that.
You could be the stool. I'd rather be the stall than the stool. Andy, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Are you happy with Arsenal's business in the transfer window?
Happy-ish. Signing good players, but still not in the right positions.
Okay, let's get stuck into this week's TV games then. Burnley versus Man City is first up. Burnley 9-1 to win this game. The draw 9-2 with Manchester City in the betting at 2-7. Manchester City continued their relentless charge to the title with a 3-0 win against West Brom in midweek. Kevin De Bruyne, yet again, influential in the outcome. And that result actually left West Brom rooted to the foot of the table. Burnley managed to grab a point at Newcastle, but their red-hot early season form is petering out slightly. And as you would expect in this fixture, Derek, Manchester City have got a good record. They've won 6 of their last 7 at Turf Moor in all competitions. And they've already beaten Burnley twice this season as well.
And this will be a third time. Long odds on away from home, but we expect nothing else now from City. And, you know, a few weeks ago, going to Burnley, you might have given a prayer to the Clarets, but they've lost, of the last 9 games, they've lost 5 and drawn 4, which is actually relegation form, isn't it? I know one of them was in the cup, but they're still in 7th. I don't understand it. How can you still be in 7th after a run like that? The manager, Sean Dyche, has been touted as the next England manager, but he's misplaced his magic touch now. And by the sound of him, also misplaced his Strepsils. I can't see anything other than a Man City win. If you don't want to back 2-7 away from home, and who does? City minus a goal of 3-4, which, you know, that's a fair price for a result which is well within their compass, isn't it? If you look how many look at the goals they've scored and the games they've played, they're probably winning each game on average about 3-4-0. So, yeah, I can see no reason why that won't cop.
City minus 2 is 2-1. City minus 1, 3-4. City minus 3, 5-1. A range of handicap markets available on the William Hill website and on the William Hill app. And it is well worth noting that Manchester City have covered that 2-goal handicap in their last 2 meetings with Burnley, both of those this season, winning 3-0 in the Premier League, 4-1 in the FA Cup. And Sergio Aguero is in fine form as well. He is very short in those goal scorer markets, 4-6 to score any time, but 14-5 to score 2 or more. He's actually scored in every one of his last 4 appearances against Burnley, scoring 6 in total in that run as well. He got one late in midweek against West Brom, and he's the only in inverted commas, recognised striker for City at the moment, Andy?
Yeah, and you've just stolen my stat.
Sorry, I do apologise.
Six goals in four games, you've stolen my stat. So, I was going to start off with Aguero and just thinking of backing him in goal scorer markets, because that's all you're doing in games like this now, where you're just scrambling around looking for a bit of potential value somewhere. I don't think 4-6 for him to score any time is terrible, to be honest. Because, like you say, he's the only striker. Burnley, with their own dicey brand of intellectually physical football, has gone off the rails a bit at the moment, and City will beat them. We'll have our Premier out, because obviously it's going to be City going to be so popular in terms of Akers. But I can't see anything but a City win, and I think Aguero will score. So maybe if you can build something around that, that's the way to go.
Possibly have a look when the enhanced odds come out. Aguero in a City, it could be a City 2-0, 3-0, 4-0 win. We've seen that before on the William Hill website. A quirk here, Manchester City 2-7 to win at Burnley. Arsenal in the TV game on Saturday evening at 5:30 are 2-7 to win at home against Everton. So which one do you prefer? Arsenal 2-7, the draw 4-1, Everton 11-1. Andy, I know which one I prefer out of those two, and it's not Arsenal at 2-7 to beat Everton. Henrik Mkhitaryan might start in this game. They have Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang to come in as well after his move from Dortmund. But Everton have Theo Walcott going back to the Emirates, and he scored twice in Everton's 2-1 win against Leicester City in midweek. And Arsenal come into this on the back of that dismal result against Swansea.
Well, yeah, and I might hate to pick on him again, given his venerable status, but Petr Cech, what are we saying? What are we seeing? If he wasn't Petr Cech, what would we be talking about? He's you know, dare I say to Derek, he's worse than Mignolet.
Well, I know. I'm expecting Klopp to buy him. He's that bad.
So, you know, I'm with you. If you were backing a 2-7 shot out of these two, it would be City. Having said that, Arsenal are so Jekyll and Hyde, home and away. At home, they're good. And they'll win this game because they always beat Everton. I expect Arsenal to win the game. But like you said, Theo Walcott's coming back. And his problem for his career is getting up for games. Well, he'll be up for this one. And he's also a confidence player. Throwing back two midweek, I think it was about 4-1 for him to score any time. I wouldn't mind having a bit of that at the moment.
You can do. It's 4-1 for him to score any time away at Arsenal on Saturday night as well with William Hill. So 4-1 Walcott to score at any time in this match. Derek, I've got to pull at your strings here because I know you're a huge fan of Mesut Ozil, and he's put pen to paper on a new 3-year deal which will keep him at the Emirates until 2021. He's a player that polarises opinion, Derek. But the Arsenal hierarchy will clearly feel that's a big boost with Ozil, a player of his quality, undoubted quality, having 3 more years under probably Arsene Wenger.
Yeah, well, when he put pen to paper, he had to go for a lie down afterwards. He was so exhausted. You know what? Remember when Liverpool signed Mario Balotelli, and even when he was at Manchester City, I looked at that player and I thought, he's useless. Absolutely useless. And every time I look at Ozil, I think the same. And yeah, the whole world is telling me what a wonderful player he is. He isn't. I don't see him do anything. Nothing crucial to a team. You're more likely to be beaten with Mesut Ozil in the team. And that is a terrible indictment of him and anybody who picks him. This price Arsenal 2-7 here. I like a price to scream value. But all Arsenal at 2-7 screams is back the other side, even if it's Everton. I mean, it's just 2-7 Arsenal, the way they played. If they were called anything other than Arsenal, they wouldn't be 2-7. You'd probably be getting 8-11 for them. It's a disgusting price. And Everton plus 2 goals is pretty much even money, 19-20. That's just absolutely massive. This is a team that's, okay, they were having a bad run, but that was a great result in midweek for them. I just did not see that coming, that win over Leicester. I thought Leicester were good things in midweek. And maybe they rode their luck a bit late on, Everton. But that was that's a confidence booster of a result. Whereas Arsenal have just been pasted at Swansea. I'm sorry, at 2-7 is probably the worst price I've ever seen. That won't stop me backing it, like.
I was actually thinking the same thing, Derek, when I was going through these odds for this week. You'd have to be clinically insane, I think, to back Arsenal at 2-7 to win this match.
Well, that normally includes me, the clinically insane. I mean, Everton are not great. Come on, we know that. I mean, Sam Allardyce has told the Everton board that the team is a work in progress, but I don't see that much progress. I don't see that much of a team, to be honest. But they've just had a confidence-boosting result. They're playing a team that's... They're in crisis, Arsenal. They're absolutely in crisis. They're as far away from the top four as what Burnley are, in my view. And you're getting 11-1. So, you know, I wouldn't put anybody off back in 11-1, Everton, but I just see under Allardyce, I don't see enough ambition there. You know, I can see big fat Sam going there thinking a draw will be a great result. He loves to put one over on Wenger, don't get me wrong, but I think he'll see a draw as putting one over on Wenger. So Everton with a 2-goal start, that's just even money. Madness.
Villarreal got the European nap back to winning ways 7 days ago, and I'm prepared to stick with the Yellow Submarine for a second successive week. They put in a dominant performance last week to land the nap with a 4-2 win over Real Sociedad, racing out of the blocks to lead 3-0 after 20 minutes, and they never looked back from there. That extended their unbeaten run in the league to 6 matches and was their 4th win on the spin in all competitions. They remain poised to sneak into the Champions League spot should Real Madrid endure any more slip-ups, and they have a great chance to keep up the pressure on the top 4 this week. Their opponents are Real Betis, who have lost 4 of their last 5 games on home soil and have shipped 15 goals in the process. Over the last 5 home games, that's an average of 3 goals conceded per match, and taking on a side who hit 4 last week could be a recipe for disaster for the hosts. With that in mind, there's a good chance there could be goals here too. In total, the last 4 games that Betis have played in have featured a massive 24 goals, and over 3.5 goals this week is a generous 2-1. However, it's an away win for me, and with Villarreal for a second week in a row, and take them to win here at 7-5 as the nap selection.
Crystal Palace versus Newcastle is next. This is the first of the 2 games on Sunday that are televised. Palace are shared of odds against 21-20 to win this game. The draw 9-4 with Newcastle in the market at 11-4. Palace have definitely, as I mentioned on previous podcasts, had an upturn since Roy Hodgson took command, but this is still, Derek, 13th versus 14th in the table, just a couple of points separating the two sides. Palace drew at West Ham midweek, and it was definitely 2 points dropped for Newcastle against Burnley. That had the feeling of a big game for Newcastle as well, if they could have just held on and grabbed all 3 points there. And Rafa Benitez, he must be distressed with the way the transfer window in January has worked out. Even though they brought in Islam Slimani, that was a last-minute deal, and it could be a big last-minute deal as well, because he... has that injection of pace that they clearly need up front, Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, he's not a striker that would be flirting with anybody in the top, you know, the top 6 or whatever. But he's probably better Slimani than anything Newcastle have got up front at the moment. So, and they've got Kennedy from Chelsea, who's looking a bit of a bright spark as well. So it ain't all gloom and doom for Newcastle. And you know, they're in. Everybody's saying, you know, they, unless you sign big players, they're going to go down. But they're in 14th. You know, there's 14th spot. Not that far away from 10th spot in Bournemouth. You know, I know they're closer probably to the drop, but there's a lot worse teams than Newcastle in the league. And there's nothing to choose between these two sides. But Newcastle have got a manager about 1,000,000% superior than the one saddled in the Palace dugout. And Newcastle are 11-4. They were 3-1 earlier today, 11-4. That's too big. I'm going to go for Newcastle. My only reservation here is that Rafa might think a draw here will be a good result for us. But they've won, you know, the form at home, Newcastle hasn't been great, but they've won 3 away from home, which for a team that's fighting relegation isn't that bad. That's as many as Bournemouth. It's as many as Arsenal, by the way. Newcastle have won as many away games as Arsenal have. And the 3-1 almost to beat Palace. I'll be back in that.
Here's a stat for you. Roy Hodgson could become the 3rd manager to beat Newcastle in the Premier League with 4 or more different teams alongside Sam Allardyce and Mark Hughes. Hodgson has previously beaten Newcastle with Blackburn, Fulham and West Brom, so looking to make it 4 with Palace this weekend. That stat comes from Opta. I'm not sure it means anything at all, but it's there anyway if you want to use it. Andy, how do you see this fixture?
Well, we talked about people in white coats maybe coming to the door. I hope Derek's not looking out the window because they might be knocking.
For what reason? They've got they'd have a long list, wouldn't they?
I think Crystal Palace are a certainty here.
Do you?
I really think they're a really good price. They're a better team than Newcastle. I knew Derek would talk about the managers, and I wouldn't have a huge lot of argument with him. I probably wouldn't go as far to each extreme. But it's the players that play, not the manager. And Crystal Palace are playing better than Newcastle, and they're at home. I just think odds against is a really good price.
Okay, difference of opinion there in that one. 21-20 Palace, Newcastle 11-4. No doubt that will end all square now. That's 9-4, the draw in the match. On to the big one on Sunday then, Liverpool versus Spurs at Anfield. 21-20 Liverpool to win this match. The draw 13-5, Spurs are 5-2. And after slipping up against Swansea in the league and West Brom in the cup, Liverpool bounced back with a dominant performance against Huddersfield in midweek, winning 3-0. And Spurs battered Manchester United, really, winning that game by 2-0. And we'll talk more about the fallout in that fixture with Carrie later on in the podcast, that Spurs win against Manchester United. But Liverpool, I suppose the question I want to ask you here, Andy, is if you could pick between the managers, Mauricio Pochettino and Jurgen Klopp, which one would you choose? If you were going into a Premier League club, you had all the money in the world, and you had to select a manager between the two, would it be Klopp or Pochettino for you, Andy?
Pochettino all day, so far, on what he's done. I just think he just knows what he's doing, and I think Klopp has one method, and he kind of gets stuck after that, and I think that's what Derek said. But it's a very good method, what he's got, and I'm not saying he's a bad manager, but I think Pochettino's got more to him than that, so he'll ultimately be more successful long term.
Okay, and what about this match?
This match, really difficult to call. Liverpool play better, I think, particularly at home against the big teams. The teams will come on to them, helps them more. I actually think they'll probably sneak a win here, but it'll be tight. I know in that Tottenham-Man United game, I said there'd be fleets of buses coming down to Wembley with Mourinho driving them all. But I think some of them got stalled on the way there and didn't arrive in time. I think Liverpool will probably squeak out a win here.
Yeah, OK, Liverpool to win the game at 21-20. Some stats in favour of Liverpool in the lead-up to this one. They've only been beaten once in their last 23 games at Anfield against Spurs. They've won 15 of those and drawn 7. And they are still unbeaten in their last 14 Premier League games at home as well. The last time they went on a longer run than this was back in December 2016. And Liverpool, a shade of odds against at 21-20. And as Andy just referenced there, Derek, this is the type of game that Liverpool can get up for. They know they are going to concede a bit of possession, but they can hit a side like Spurs on the counter as well. They don't want a lot of the ball, do they, Liverpool, really?
No, they don't. But, you know, everything you say, yeah, I'm pretty sure that we were all saying that before the reverse fixture at Wembley, and they got absolutely tonked 4-0. They're coming into this game in terrible form. Don't let what happened to get at Huddersfield for a 3-0 for Liverpool. That's the minimum requirement against Huddersfield, who are absolutely pony. I remember the game against West Brom, the game before that against Swansea. Liverpool are going nowhere right now. This fixture finished last season 2-0 for Liverpool. Liverpool gave Tottenham a bit of a good hiding that day. Tottenham got all the tactics wrong, and they played the way exactly Liverpool wanted them to play. I don't think Pochettino, if he's worth his salt and he's worth all the adulation that's heaped upon him, will make that same mistake again. One thing I would say about Tottenham is that amid all the acclaim that's been given to Harry Kane, who deserves it, and to Dele Alli, who doesn't, the guy who's made them tick in the last two seasons is Eriksen.
Yeah.
People have had his doubts. I've had the doubts about him, saying he's the most overrated thing to come out of Scandinavia since the girl with the dragon tattoo. But every time I see him, that's an awful book, by the way. Every time I see him, I think he's brilliant. He's Hazard-like to me, Eriksen. And right now, I don't think Liverpool, without Coutinho, I don't think Liverpool have got anybody like him. I fancy Spurs here at 5-2. I want to back against Liverpool because I'm watching them and I'm not seeing anything. All the players that started the season so great, Mane, Salah, Firmino even, the touch is gone. The confidence is gone. The midfield isn't firing. He brought in Milner and Henderson in midweek against Huddersfield, and that was an improvement because the midfield three in the previous two games had been shocking. But if you're saying Milner and Henderson is an improvement for a team that's got Champions League play aspirations, well, that's not great. I think Tottenham will win this.
Monday night football is Watford versus Chelsea at Vicarage Road. 8 p.m. kickoff for this one. Watford are 5-1 to win the game. The draw 3-1 with Chelsea in the market at 4-7. Chelsea are in a real dogfight for that top four spot now. And Andy's been saying this on the podcast for much of the season. There's something not quite right at Chelsea Football Club at the moment. And that was evident on Wednesday night as well. 3-0 they got beaten at home against Bournemouth. And I think Roman Abramovich will be seriously concerned with that result because if you're getting beaten, Derek, 3-0 at home by a side like Bournemouth, there's a deep lying problem at the club.
Well, yeah. And he'll be gone, won't he, by the end of the season, you know, after the end of the season, if not before. Conte has body language screams that he's not happy there. The players don't seem happy. But a team like Chelsea, who've spent money like it's been going out of fashion over the years, they had no strikers in midweek. They had Eden Hazard playing up front. I mean, how has that been allowed to happen on Abramovich's watch, on Conte's watch? I don't know. And it was no fluke, that result against Bournemouth. Bournemouth deserved to win 3-0. I only saw the brief highlights, but I've read enough reports and heard enough from it to suggest, you know, it was well deserved. 2 seasons ago, Chelsea lost at home to Bournemouth 1-0. Everybody expected the response from them because it was Chelsea. But in the next Premier League game, they lost 2-1 at Leicester. So, you know, this is not an easy fix for them. I mean, I know Watford, you could arguably say that under the new manager, they're showing signs of recovery. I mean, they scored as recently as last month. How much they're recovering. I think their players have been spent the last fortnight learning the Spanish for Welliot because their open play under the previous manager wasn't hacking it. And they've shut up shop a little bit. Drew 0-0 last week against Stoke, I think it was. This is a tough fixture for Chelsea. I remember the reverse fixture when Watford were unlucky to lose when Marco Silva was the manager. He played really, really well. Was it the 4-2 game, that one? I think it was. I think Watford are worth the bet here, you know. I know their form recently, you know, their results recently have been terrible. But 5-1 to beat Chelsea, was not convincing anybody right now. If Hazard has one of his going days, Chelsea will probably win. But he's given the impression at the moment that he's fed up doing everything. I like Watford here, 5-1.
2 points to pick up on from Derek's preview of that match. They have addressed the situation up front. They've brought in Olivier Giroud.
Which is no address of the situation, by the way.
He's even money to score any time. I knew you'd say that, Derek. But given that they have Aspilicueta, who's out at the moment, and Marcus Alonso as their wing-backs, it might be a positive that Giroud has gone in there. They've actually scored 13 goals from headers so far this season, which is the most in the league. That is where Giroud is at his best in the air, definitely. And I think to pick up on another point that Derek made about Watford, you can pinpoint their decline to Richarlison, who started the season absolutely sensationally. He's gone off the boil completely, and I think that's a key factor in their recent demise. He's not scored in his last 12 Premier League appearances and only has one assist in that spell as well. So I think 2 points there. Richarlison out of form for Watford. He made them tick early on in the season. And Giroud may be in line for a start for Chelsea away at Watford on Monday night, Andy.
Yeah, it could well be. And it's, you know, when you look at the Chelsea manager, Conte, and he doesn't stay at clubs very long. He falls out with too many people. They've just been scrambling around for the last month finding the big physical centre-forward. They used to have one of them. Wasn't he named Costa? But he fell out with him. You know, he fell out with him, he's gone. He's fallen out with Luiz. He falls out with too many people. And that's why he can't stay at a club too long. Whereas you've got the new manager in at Watford, and as I predicted last week, you're not going to see pretty stuff coming out of there. If you're a Watford fan, if you're playing on a Saturday night, stay up late because they're going to be last on match of the day every time. So, you know, I can only see a low-scoring game there. But I can't see Watford scoring that. Like you say, they're completely out of touch going forward. Richarlison out of form. I think the league's worked him out, to be honest. He was a new lad and they kind of got the benefit for a few weeks, and then the league's looked at him and said, right, well, we'll work out how to shut him down. And they have. So I just can't see Watford scoring. Chelsea will probably nick one and that will win the game for them.
Under 2.5 goals, by the way, in this match is even money if you like the unders like Andy does. And if you're looking at Chelsea to win it 1-0, that's 13-2. Chelsea to win it 2-0, that's in the market at 7-1. That's it then. We've done the five matches that are televised this weekend. Let's get the best bets. Andy, do you want to lead us off this week?
Go on then, I've got to go with Crystal Palace. Just to wind Derek up.
Oh no!
I was just about to say,
I like Tottenham at 5-2 to win at Liverpool, right? But Newcastle are a bigger price to win at Palace. It's an easier task to win at Palace than Tottenham to win at Liverpool, in my eyes. And Newcastle, so I was going to go for Newcastle, but as Andy's pinched that game,
Derek, should I be nice to you? So I let you have that, and I'll have West Brom. I'll have West Brom and to Southampton.
Well, now you've scuppered me because I think that's the stick-on draw of the entire season. West Brom and to Southampton.
We've done him a kiffer there, Derek. Let's stick with what we've got.
How are we going to work this out, lads?
Oh, no, I'll tell you what. Then you have Palace, Andy. I'll have Tottenham to beat Liverpool.
Okay.
And then I'll leave Dave free for the draw in a West Brom game.
That sounds like a good plan to me, Derek. So Crystal Palace for Andy at 21-20. Derek's going to go with Spurs to win at Liverpool at 5-2. And I'm going to take that nailed on draw at the Hawthorns. 21-10 West Brom versus Southampton to end all square. 21.24-1. That treble. We've come about it in a roundabout way, listeners, but hopefully it'll cop this weekend. So it's Palace, Spurs away at Liverpool, and the draw in West Brom versus Southampton, and it pays just over 21-1.
I'm going off to consider the rest of my life now that Derek McGovern's a nicer man than me.
Now at William Hill, you can get your bet onto the website for featured matches. If there's a bet you fancy that's not on the app, just tweet with the hashtag #YourOdds to @WilliamHill and the traders will try to price it up. Hashtag #YourOdds from William Hill.
Now, it's a delight to be joined by Carrie Brown on the podcast, a sports correspondent covering a wide range of sports, often seen on beIN Sports and the FWA's channel on YouTube as well. First of all, a good morning to you, Carrie. A warm welcome along to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And you're fresh from a visit to Wembley last night, which ended in the early hours of this morning. It must have been a delight to watch that Spurs side last night.
It was absolutely staggering. That goal in 10.5 seconds, just a wow moment, nothing else for it. And what was ridiculous is if you go to write it on your laptop and put it on social media, and the social media and the Wi-Fi had absolutely crashed because everyone had their phone out recording that moment live on their Facebook channel or whatever. There, all the fans, not the journalists, of course, all the fans literally taking that momentous moment for Tottenham fans, being one up against Manchester United, a club they've struggled with famously throughout their history. It was a breathtaking performance from Tottenham.
And I suppose it changes the complexion for the top four finish now as well. I mean, Manchester United, I think it can be sometimes forgotten that they are still 5 points ahead of Spurs in the league. They've scored as many goals as Spurs. But given their dominance last night, Spurs, who are now 4-7 to finish in the top four, must have that belief again, because they overran Manchester United in midfield in particular. I thought Christian Eriksen was outstanding. Paul Pogba didn't get involved at all last night, Kerry.
Yeah, one thing that you wouldn't have seen away from the cameras, I don't know if it then came in highlights afterwards when there was the Phil Jones own goal. Actually, Mourinho got Pogba over and he didn't just have a quiet word. He had a 10-15 second spitting tirade at Pogba for coming out of position there. He literally didn't stop, although I wonder if he then told him to tell the rest of the boys to use brute force, because that's literally what came straight after, didn't it? But it was an interesting contrast, because I had John Cross, chief football writer, in the Mirror with me pitch side, because we were assessing, you know, all these ridiculous transfers of the Arsenal departure and the transfer triangle. And I said to him, where does it leave that 2 to 2-5, 2-6 position that's so tight now. And we talked pre-match, because we've both been at Hewish Park as well against Yeovil, about what a boost Alexis Sanchez made to Manchester United, how we thought that would really solidify them, and then how our opinions were changed so quickly. You do forget, and one of the reasons why I put Manchester United, and people will cringe to hear that, out of the top four at the start of the season, is that back line. And I wonder really, if you were picking a side, would you have any of those four in it? And that's always been my question with Manchester United.
I think in the future, Derek, we're going to have a we're going to be in a position where you'll have GIFs or memes on a tombstone when a player eventually retires. And ooh, I think that was such a Phil Jones moment, wasn't it, Derek, last night?
It was. The next Duncan Edwards, Fergie you want to call them. They like the next Duncan Norvell last night. I mean, they're absolutely atrocious, United. And, you know, the way they played last night, I'm surprised it took Spurs so long to go ahead, to be honest. 10 seconds, it's a long time. United were absolutely a joke. And Mourinho, he's run out of excuses now. I think last night he was considering blaming the moon for being too big for United's performance. You look at that back four, the money United have spent in recent seasons, and the back four are still the faces who struggled under Louis van Flatface, and then again under David Moyes. They're just not good enough, and United won't ever challenge for the title with that defence. Luke Shaw looked as though he was coming into form in recent weeks, and then for the big game, he's turfed out, and in comes Ashley Young, who will never make a fullback. The two guys in the front, you know, well, you mentioned Alexis Sanchez, who looked like a great signing for them, but the problem with him is that he hasn't got a defensive bone in his body, and Phil Jones hasn't got a defensive bone in his head. They're in real trouble, you know, at United. I know they're in second place, but I said on this podcast a few weeks ago, Dave, if you'll remember, they ain't going to finish there. They ain't good enough to finish second. And I Carey almost went as far as to say they're not going to finish in the top four, and I don't think they will.
You think they'll finish outside the top four, Derek?
Yeah, even though they've got a healthy margin between them and the likes of Spurs.
Do you think Carey this? Are a bet, do you think Carey this? Sorry, Derek. Do you think, Carey, that Romelu Lukaku might not start up front in a big game away at a top six club in the future? Because they seem a bit disjointed. You saw Harry Kane. He held the ball up brilliantly and brought other players into play last night. When it goes up to Lukaku, that first touch is often a heavy one. And Derek's made the comment before that his second touch is always a tackle, Lukaku. And I thought they were exposed in that area. And we saw the difference in quality between Kane and Lukaku last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think the 5 minutes after they actually conceded that goal, they had three good chances, and two of them came from Lukaku, didn't they? But that is that crucial pinpoint finishing, isn't it? They just doesn't seem to be producing at the moment, and that's got to bring tremendous concern for them. I think, though, in terms of firepower, it might just be, that might not ultimately be their problem. I think if enough people test them defensively, and that really was a key indicator that's the way to go, then they'll be in real trouble. Quite interesting what you're saying about Jose Mourinho, though. I don't want to shock everyone, but he was actually magnanimous in defeat. And wait for it. He admitted, and I was actually staggered, when he said that the first goal was absolutely ridiculous. I said, was it ridiculous because Kane was in your half? And he was like, no. And he said, yeah, he was. He was in the half. And if the referee and the linesman hadn't seen that, then that goal wouldn't have been allowed. But we made three mistakes. I'm not going to blame the referee. It was that bad. It was that bad that Mourinho, the Machiavellian man to fit it in all seasons, stunned me with being magnanimous and said he would not blame it. I actually had a 2p sportsman's bet with Des Kelly that he would go out and blame the ref. He was like, he won't on this. And I lost it.
That's an interesting side point, by the way. That opening goal, yeah, it was highlighted on one of the TV channels last night, the Kane being in United's half as they kicked off. Now, had that match been on VAR, this is yet another minus point of VAR, there would have been no alternative but to disallow that goal, which would have been a joke, wouldn't it? It would have been an absolute... To disallow that goal for a minor infringement like that would have held VAR for the absolute nonsense that it is. And I almost wish that would have happened, and we could have had an end to all this VAR nonsense. But that's an argument for another day. Sorry for interjecting there.
And then when a team gets relegated because a goal's gone in, you'll be calling for it again.
It's happened a million times, Carey. It will happen a million times. That's what makes football great. VAR kills it.
Very true.
Where do you stand on VAR, Carrie, just quickly?
The controversy is going nowhere, and the VAR won't get rid of that. There will still be the It's still at one point, it still comes down to a human decision. I do think there are days when you walk away from teams that are struggling and teams where this means, you know, the fight for their future, the fight against relegation, the place in Europe that will help them get the signings in to grow, and the decision has gone against them, and then you walk away and say that there is no justice in that. And it can mean sometimes that margin of error is just too valuable, and in this day and age, we don't need it. I know there's been the pause and the deliberation. This is a trial, but a trial in real time, in real competitions, which is perplexing for everyone. But the big screens need to be sorted out. So the entertainment value, the time will come down. It will get better. All the players in Italy that are calling for it to go now want it in the Champions League. I know it ends some of the fun and the drama, but I think sometimes the margins of error are too valuable for some of the smaller clubs, and it can mean the difference between survival and staying in the Premier League. And I don't think in this day and age we can justify that.
Just before we move on to the transfer window that slammed metaphorically shut last night, I just want a quick word on Paul Pogba with you, Derek, because you've been one of his biggest fans throughout his career, Paul Pogba. There seems to be an unwillingness to criticise him, but last night's performance was bordering on disgraceful from Pogba. Didn't get involved at all, and it's only so long you can criticise Mourinho for playing him out of position. He needs to step up and influence these big matches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does, but would you play Eden Hazard as a holding midfielder? I mean, if the manager's decision to play, if you've got a gem like Pogba in your side who you paid how much for, I don't know, 90 million quid for, and you know what his best position is, it's going forward, creating havoc in the opposing half, and you sit him alongside Nemanja Matic, well, you get all, you deserve all you get. He's ruined Paul Pogba. He's ruined every player at United this season. I don't think this is a player who's improved under Mourinho. And that's, you know, I've said all along, he's a busted flush. That underlines it.
Okay, let's talk about the transfer window. Closed last night. And I suppose the transfer triangle, Carrie, was the big story of this window. Exciting January transfer window, with the triangle between Arsenal and Chelsea and Dortmund eventually resolving itself. And all parties seem to be pretty happy with the way things have gone, Carrie.
Yeah, how quickly karma comes around in a transfer window is all that I can think. I got, when Coutinho was finally announced, I got someone on Twitter saying, terrible club, basically the way they tapped them out, absolutely disgusting, tapped them up, absolutely disgusting. And I politely sort of cast their eye to Virgil van Dijk and the fact that Liverpool had to make an apology for their pursuit of him over the summer. And then quickly Arsene Wenger, who had made Manchester City sweat over Alexis Sanchez until he got his replacement in, and then didn't get Lamar in and told Alexis Sanchez he couldn't actually go off to Manchester City, then was sat sweating. You were like, will this come around for him? Is he actually going to miss out on Aubameyang? It's amazing how quickly it all comes around for the teams, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think Aubameyang, it should be a good signing for Arsenal, should fit them perfectly as well. In terms of the relegation picture now, which club do you think enhanced their chances of survival in this window, Kerry?
I think you've got to look at Swansea and the situation they are in, and not necessarily how much they've been enhanced, brought AE back, and I think that's more the indication of what Carlos Carvajal is doing, and the fact he's doing so well that he can attract a player back in, and that's a great thing. You've got Andy King as well, but I think that club's looking in a great state. I think Newcastle, again, they only brought in loan signings, didn't spend money, that says enough. I think there's genuine concern about Southampton. Fans don't feel they've done enough in the window, and they're not behind their manager, so I'm quite concerned for Southampton and Newcastle after this transfer window.
The latest betting as far as the relegation picture is concerned, Huddersfield 8-15 to go down now, Swansea even money, Brighton 5-4, West Brom 5-4, Newcastle 9-4, Stoke 5-2 to go down, Southampton into 4-1 now, and it's 7-1 and bigger the rest. Derek, I'm looking at that relegation picture, and West Brom are leaping out at 5-4. They're rock bottom as things stand. They didn't get that new manager bounce with Alan Pardew, and they've not made any real impact in the transfer window.
Well, they've got an England striker, haven't they? Daniel Sturridge.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah, yeah. That's a massive one.
Yeah, when he joined, he asked about his position in the team, his wages, and the sick pay. I mean, if you get him fit, that's a tremendous sign and throw him on loan. He's better than anything they've got there. And to be honest, their performance against Liverpool at the weekend suggests that they're not going to be in trouble too much longer if they replicate that in the league, that is. I don't think they'll go down. I've been saying all along that Huddersfield are the worst team I've ever seen in any standard of football, Sunday League included. And now the odds are implying that they're the favourites to go down. And well, they were about 10th, weren't they, a week or so ago. I think West Brom have done the best out of that transfer window. I know I've criticised Sturridge for being lazy. I mean, he eats a third of a Mars bar now every day just to help him rest. Daniel Sturridge. But I think he's quality. Honestly, he's quality, and he will help them climb out of the drop. So yeah, they've done the best out of the transfer window.
You think West Brom, yeah?
Yeah,
okay,
definitely.
Okay. And Kerry, we've seen some of the younger starlets go out on loan as well in this transfer window. Do you think that's a worrying trend for the Premier League, that some of the in inverted commas best young stars have had to go elsewhere to get first team play?
Yeah, I think it's becoming a trend, and I think I can understand why. They know they're going to get regular football. It's regular football, which should be classed as being at top flight clubs. But the consistency of the players taking the loan options out there, Adam Lookman going to Leipzig, Jadon Sancho over there, Reece Oxford mentioned Gladbach. I'm concerned about the number that now think that's their destinations, when their managers could say actually they can go on loan here in the Championship. There are other clubs nearby where they would like them, and they're actually pushing to go away to the German league. And I think it will be something that concerns Gareth Southgate. It will be something that concerns the England setup at St George's Park. But the belief is they can't get the chance here in England. It'll put them on the European circuit, be a good flag to everyone else. Is it difficult to get them back playing here? I'm not sure it's the right trend to be setting, because it very much seems the destination they want to be over being at their clubs or being out on loan.
And Kerry, just before we wrap up here, what's the or who has the bargain of the transfer window?
Well, let's see. It's definitely my favourite story of the transfer window. 4 years ago, a certain Riyad Mahrez was brought on transfer for ridiculous $330,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
From a second division club in France. West Brom, not West Brom, Leicester have brought Fasani Diabate, I'll get his name right this time. He's brought from a second division club that play on the island of Corsica, and he was spotted because their manager Claude Puel's son plays for them too. He came on against Peterborough, and I stole this story from Laurie Whitwell. He wrote a brilliant piece on it. He scored two goals and an assist, and put in place of everyone there watching who'd watched Riyad Mahrez come up, said, like, let's not get carried away. But his positioning, his pace, they were drawing conclusions. Not expected, obviously, to excel to that level of going on and helping the team win the Premier League. But they brought him in for about 1.2 million, I think, off the top of my head. And that's a hell of a debut, even ahead of Peterborough. So, yeah, it wouldn't be bad, would it, if Torpio could say that his son got someone in.
My name's Pete Farries, and last week's Championship nap was a disaster. But, well, QPR had chances. They played 10 men. Frustrating, very frustrating. Anyway, the point is that this week it's going to be Preston at 21-20. Hull haven't scored in four away games in a row. Their only away win this season came in a narrow 1-0 victory over Barnsley back in October. And Preston, despite selling their top goal scorer Jordan Hughgill, have got a lot of money in their pocket, have still got some good strikers, and are often very, very good at home. In fact, only Middlesbrough, Brentford and Villa have won at Deepdale this season. Preston at 21-20 is often a good price against any one in this league at Deepdale. Hull travel terribly, and for me, Preston will therefore be a very, very good 21-20. It's a simple one for me this week. Hopefully it's a victorious one for me this week. I've got a lot of making up on the naps table to do, but in the meantime, let's look at League One with Gav Pushilowski.
Number of selections I could have gone for in League One this weekend. I fancy Rotherham odds against at home to Wimbledon. I fancy Oldham odds against struggling Bradford. I think Plymouth plus a goal at home to Blackburn is very tempting. But I'm playing a side I've never played before as my nap in League One. They look pretty similar in league position to their opponents on Saturday, but they're a cut above on the current form guide. And now is a good time to play Northampton Town at 8-5 to beat struggling Rochdale. Rochdale on their travels, not very good in League One. Got a decent 2-2 draw away at Millwall, conceded a last-minute equaliser to take it to a replay. And that's got to be playing on the mind of Rochdale. But Rochdale in League One, 6 consecutive defeats on their travels, and in every single game they've conceded more than a goal. Northampton Town, well, they're mid-table in the current form guide with 10 points from their last 6 games, and actually it's 10 from their last 4. Rochdale have taken just 2 points from their last 6 games and sit bottom of the form guide. Jonjo O'Toole is scoring from midfield, 4-4 for him. Look at him to score any time. Chris Long, Alex Ravel scoring goals, and they've recently signed Kevin Van Veen from Scunthorpe to boost their attack options. Northampton, 8-5 is my nap selection. It could be over 2.5 goals. I think Northampton and over 2.5 goals at 7-2 is very tempting, but Northampton to win, 8-5, my nap. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Not a great fan of odds on shouts in League Two because it is a fairly unpredictable beast. However, 7-10 on Mansfield this week looks about as safe as this league ever gets. They're one of only 5 teams in the league who are averaging more than 2 points per game at home this season. The only real blot on their copybook recently was against Cardiff in the Cup, although a fourth-tier side forcing a replay with a draw at Cardiff is hardly a blot. In league terms, they are the form side. 4 wins in 5 unbeaten since early December, only 1 defeat in 16. And bear in mind that 16 games into the season, they had 22 points. We're now 13 games later. They've added an extra 28 in that time. The pre-season title favourites are now 5th in the table and a win away from 2nd place. They take on Barnet. Now, both sides have brought in several signings in the final days of the window, or in Barnett's case, 3 in the final half hour and 1 other. But as you'd expect, the side battling for automatic promotion got a higher calibre than the one currently losing a relegation dogfight. And losing it, Barnett certainly are. My lack of faith in Graham Wesley as the new boss doesn't help matters, but 22 points in total this season. And yet that's only half the story, because 10 of those points came from their opening 6 games. It is 12 points from a possible 69 since. They are 4 points adrift at the bottom of the table, just 2 points from the last 7 games, and only 9 points away from home all season, 5 of which came from their opening 4 away trips. This is a no-brainer. It's Mansfield at 7-10.
Thank you everyone for tuning in to the Punt Podcast. That is it for this week. I do hope you've enjoyed it. A special thanks to our FWA contributor this week, Carrie Brown from Bein Sports, talking about the transfer window and about that magnificent Spurs performance in midweek against Manchester United as well. Do check out all the betting for this week's football by going to sports.williamhill.com. Alternatively, you can check out all the latest betting on the William Hill app, and keep your eye on at William Hill for the latest enhancements throughout the course of the weekend. To get this podcast delivered weekly, check us out at audioboom.com, and it's available at all the usual podcast places as well. If you're having a bet this week, the very best of luck to you, and tune in to the next edition of the Pump Podcast on Monday afternoon.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.